Welcome to the Invasion Remake Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Bishop, and just getting over a little bit of a cold. I am a mucus-making machine. We skipped a record week just so I didn't sound too horrible last week. And yeah, we're this week we're talking about a 1967. I don't have my notes in front of me where I should. 1967 French movie Oscar, which was based on, I do believe, a 1953 play of the same name. And the 1991 John Landis remake of the same name, starring Sylvester Stallone. Now, the original 1967 was directed by Eduardo Molinaro. And like I said, it was based on a play by Claude Monnier?
How'd I do?
Sounds French.
Claude Monnier.
Claude. It was adapted to screen by Jean Helene, Eduardo Molinaro, and Louis de Funès. Who also stars in this movie as Bertrand Barnier.
Mm-hmm.
Barnier. It's going to be like this the whole way. Also starring Claude Rich, Mario David, and I thank you for people having some normal names. Germaine Delbot. Well, fuck you. Claude Jean-Sock. Agatha. Sure. Nansen, Dominic Page, Paul Prebost, and Roger something or other.
Van Hool.
I don't know.
And
Silvio Sorrell. Yeah, there's a lot of French names, and I'm sure our listeners are going, you guys live in Canada. We're in the wrong side of Canada.
Not even that. Quebecois French and Parisian French, different.
Yeah, different. So even,
like, imagine a drunken Glaswegian and they're still speaking English.
So for the one French listener in France that we might, may or may not have,
we apologize in advance.
Yeah, apologies.
Yeah, so, we're trying.
Yeah. Now, okay, the Oscar movies are, the play was 1953-ish area, and certainly was more of a vaudeville theme, had a very vaudeville classic feel to it, this vaudevillian farce, as it were. And
a comedy of errors.
Yes.
Yes. Term.
Comedy of errors, absolutely. And man, trying to figure out how to explain this plot without a flowchart is kind of crazy, but we're going to give this an attempt. Okay, so we... Oh, fuck. Okay, this one's good. It was exhausting just watching the French version and trying to keep... Because there's so much dialogue and trying to keep up with the English subtitles. It was kind of crazy. And it was really hard to even find an English version.
Yeah, I never had that problem with the subtitles.
No.
I didn't have any.
You couldn't find it at all.
Couldn't get it to work, yeah. So I watched like the best of parts. So I'm very poorly versed for this section of the...
And I had to try a couple of times to get the subtitles.
Yeah, so it's very difficult to find in English, so for you guys who might want to find this movie, you might be stuck watching it in French. It was really hard to find an English
But hey, if you're better at French than us,
Which is pretty much everybody.
I don't know what idiot suggested we do this movie.
That would be you walking out last week or the week before.
No, it would be funny. No, that was a terrible idea. I didn't know. I broke my one cardinal rule. Don't make it harder on Jeff than it has to be.
Well, we talked about the Academy Awards last episode, and as he's walking out, hey, since I made an Oscar joke at the beginning of that podcast, let's do Oscar.
Terrible.
Yeah, that worked out well. Okay, so we have Christian Martin shows up, and he goes up to his boss asking for a raise, and boss wakes him up early in the morning. A lot of this is the same in the other movie as well, and Barnier comes out, and he's this rich industrialist. I think he makes doorknobs or something. They do make a reference to doorknobs.
He's a construction guy.
He's construction.
I think the doorknobs were part of a construction, but when you find out later how many doorknobs there are, I'm wondering what the hell he's constructing, because that's a lot of doorknobs.
I know. It's got to be like the tallest building.
But also, it's funny, is this guy, he's like the boss, and he's like, oh no, I'm not allowed to disturb him before 11 a.m.
Yeah, his butler. Yeah,
like that's his work. His workday starts at 11, guys.
Yeah, yeah. So Christian keeps tipping him. He's like, yeah,
here's some money.
Here's a few more francs. You can wake him up. And how does he have all this money? Because he's been stealing liberally $65 million, I think they said. Yeah,
$64,723,000
francs. Yeah, I couldn't be bought. I just rounded up.
I'd love to know. I saw that figure and... it's only like $50,000 or $100,000 total in the other Oscar. So I wonder, are the amounts skewed? Like, is that a considerable amount of money in 1967 compared to $100,000 in 1930s America? Did anybody do that conversion?
Yeah, I was trying to do the conversion for it. I couldn't find it. Like, francs.
Yeah, what was the conversion rate in 1967?
And you've got to sort of. It's hard to work your way back because now France and a bunch of other countries are on the euro. So you're not trying to find now today francs. You're trying to find today euro against old francs and like the buying power there. So it's sort of, you've got to kind of work your way around. I couldn't really find it. It's a significant amount of money.
Maybe we should have done, welcome to the Economist section of the Invasion of the Remake. Maybe what we should have done is tried to find the like average living wage for 1930s America as compared to the average living wage of 1960s France, and then like extrapolate the difference between that amount of money and how many years you could live, and that would tell you if you were wealthy or not.
Yeah, well, he was definitely wealthy. Had one hell of a big place, sunning rooms.
It was like painfully 60s. Oh my god.
Oh, very 60s.
I loved it though. I would live in that house.
That whole movie is just like, hello, the 60s.
It is a portrait of the 60s, and I don't even think it matters what country you're in. It all kind of looked like that.
Opening is very French 1960s cinema.
Yeah. It is very.
Oh, the tidy cars and I think it had that old cinema squeeze that you would get on those wide cameras.
It kind of felt that way.
And maybe it was just really tiny cars, but because they were. But
I felt like I guess it wouldn't be costuming, just the clothes in this movie is like, I haven't watched a lot of French movies, like Man Bites a Dog maybe is the only one off the top of my head I can think of. And Amelie more recently, but it was like, it's what I think American 60s, like their idealized vision of what that like era looks like is what France looked like. Like it was like way over the top. Like it was like every scene was a runway. It was crazy.
Yeah, totally.
Because I can only go off the visual aspect of this movie because it was all in fucking French.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, and it's a lot of talking. It's a lot of talking. It's like a machine gun of French.
Oh, it's just nonstop. It is so exhausting. A couple times I had to hit pause just to take a breath and give my eyes a moment to adjust.
You're going frame by frame just to read the subtitles.
Actually, the subtitles were fairly easy to follow, despite it seemed like they were saying a lot more than the subtitles were showing me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you guys are saying a lot for a little on my screen, but I got the gist.
It's like that joke in Wayne's World where they're just saying a whole bunch and like, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm going to try to boil this down really quickly. Christian comes in, he asks for a raise, and does a lot of double talk to get the raise because he wants to marry a girl who thinks he is living a much higher standard than he actually is.
Yeah.
So Barnier says yes, and then he straightens his tie and says, okay, I'd like to ask you for your permission to marry your daughter. Because Christian is under the impression that he's marrying Barnier's daughter, which is actually not the case because the daughter also wanted him to think he was from had a big dowry and was coming from a rich family.
Yeah.
And she lied. So he's asking Barnier for his permission to marry a daughter he doesn't have yet.
Yeah, I know. Are we skipping to that part? I don't know.
I'm just going to keep motoring along with the plot so we can just talk about these movies because it's so complicated. Okay. So he goes to confront the daughter. Daughter didn't even know dad knew about a relationship. But it's a completely different relationship. And this is with the completely absent Oscar in this movie.
Is Oscar in this one the chauffeur?
He is also the chauffeur.
He's also the chauffeur.
At least he plays in the French one. Like, he's completely wasted in the Latin.
In the new one, he's not. Yeah, no. He's an idea.
He shows up right at the end as a punchline.
FYI, if this were an Academy Award nominated film, Oscar would be the leading role.
It's true. The movie's named after him.
It's named after him.
Actually, if you watch the credits roll of the French one, he's the first one to get credit at the end of the movie.
Oscar
is the first one to get credit. We talked about a little bit that last week. Anyway, so she pretends his actual daughter pretends she's knocked up.
The maid gives her the idea.
Maid's gone off with the guy that Barnier wants to actually set up his daughter with.
A baron.
Mm. And the fake daughter shows up.
Yes.
Explains what's going on. At this point, it's been revealed that Christian has been
stealing
money from Barnier and has converted it to jewels and wants to give it to the daughter. And oh my God, there's embezzlement going on here.
Yeah, like it was sort of when you come. Okay, and this is the part that kind of drove me nuts when they're talking about how he stole the money.
Yeah.
Now on the Oscar one, it's like the mob. It's just crooked accounting. You get that. In this one, there's like an accounting error with doorknobs they bought, and there's like an accounting error of 1 franc for each doorknob. So he stole 1 franc for each doorknob. So he stole 64,723,000. That was how many doorknobs that's on the last project.
Every doorknob in France.
That was on their last one project, he said.
They never said a period of time for the 90s one. He just skimmed it over time.
No, this guy.
It was like, oh yeah, last year.
Yeah, it was just because of the way the contracts were done, like they were actually cost like 2 francs less, but because there was something written in the contract, they were actually 2 francs less, so he stole that extra franc per doorknob.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a lot of doorknobs. I just still can't figure out what you'd use. What were they building?
I don't know. I think a tower of doorknobs.
A tower of doorknobs. Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe for export.
Maybe it's import-export, and it's a huge business.
They were building
60s.
A city from scratch?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, doorknobs first.
And we're talking all the doorknobs in all the houses in the bedrooms.
They're those like chic, you know, 60s French ornate cities? Door handles, right? So they're shipping it all over the world to be in like boutique home hardware places. But I feel like this is an invasion of the doorknob, so we shouldn't get too hung up on it.
Sorry, I had to bring up the doorknobs because that seems like a lot of doorknobs.
We're all obsessed about the math.
You're right. This is the economics invasion of the remake.
We should cover Equilibrium, speaking of weird math.
The top of my head. That movie's great. Okay, so now we have a fake daughter, a real daughter who's thinks that dad's talking about the dude who just showed up to propose, but she thinks it's Oscar and it's not, and there's a lot of like miscommunication and a lot of missed ideas in this movie that put everybody in different tracks of thinking.
Well, it's because all the many subplots all parallel each other.
Yeah.
So depending on when you come in, depending on what your pre-information is, mm-hmm. you could assume that it is about whatever it seemed to me like whatever you knew no matter where you were stationed in these movies, whatever was happening would relate to whatever it was you knew.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of a brilliant piece of writing.
This thing is manic, but it is so brilliant how everything moves into the next thing, into the next thing, into the next thing. Like, I'd love to watch this on stage.
I definitely felt it does work well.
And Louis de Funès had played it several times on stage.
Yeah.
So he looks very comfortable in this role. Yeah.
Yeah, and like the different bags, the bags going this way and that way, but the bags all containing different things.
Yeah, apparently in both these movies, there's only one type of luggage you can buy.
Yes.
Makes sense.
Yeah, in this world anyway.
In this world, it's the only one. Because
these bags are constantly getting switched around. And
nobody notices.
No. Because there's always a distraction.
That maid made out like a bandit.
No kidding. She got the money and the jewels and a rich baron.
I know, right?
She never got her underwear back, though.
No, she could afford to buy some new ones.
Did a banker take the underwear?
She's got 128 million francs. She can buy the better countries that make underwear.
There's a lot bigger cast in Oscar. Much bigger cast.
It was hard to figure out who everyone was.
In fact, I think almost an unnecessarily bigger cast in Oscar in some cases, just to throw in a bunch of big names.
Yeah, and I mean, like in the cast of Oscar, what they did is they added the lackeys, whereas in the French Oscar, it's just like one butler and the maid.
Yeah, it's very small. Like, the location's huge, but it's a small cast. It's like six people.
But that also tells you that it's basically like a play.
Yeah.
Because most plays, you can't have a cast of thousands. You just need a tiny...
Yeah. Yeah. So you get the masseuse who comes in, and that's the dude, the backup guy, because once it's all kind of sorted in Barnier's head, he's like, oh, shit, well, I need a new suitor for my daughter.
Because she's knocked up.
And she's knocked up. And apparently the daughter, anybody will do.
Yeah, like she wants to get out of that house bad, but I'm like think about it, sweetie.
Yeah, horrible fake cry to manipulate her father. It's just, it's like an air raid siren.
I had to turn it down. I couldn't listen to it.
It's awful. And I thought it was like bad, and Marissa Tomei actually tones it down when she plays it.
Yeah, I watched the 1991 first, and then I saw like Marissa Tomei, and I'm like going, oh, that's too much. And then I watched the 1967, and I'm like going, oh, that's about right.
She toned it down.
She put subtlety in that.
Yeah, she was just saying a lot. Anybody who hates that 1991 movie, just go ahead and try.
This is a very subtle and moving performance.
Yeah. You'll suddenly appreciate the performances more in the Landis version.
Yeah, that's what I felt, especially with the lead in the French one, from what I was observing, not understanding, was he was really frantic, like,
oh god,
flailing around and like over exaggerating everything. Oh, and
at times he just goes nuts.
Insane. Zazin.
I don't know what that means. But
I know, but it means going batty, but I'm like, I love that. Zazin, it just says it, like you're crazy.
Oh, yeah. He just starts, oh, yeah. At one point, he does this weird thing with his face, like he's stretching his face.
Yeah, and like his nose. I didn't understand what all that was.
Like, he was kept trying to fake cut off his face.
I think this was a French humor thing.
That one went way over my head. I'm like, what is going on here?
Yeah, I think you have to be French to get it. I don't understand it.
No, was it a Pinocchio thing? I don't know.
Just pulling off his nose, pulling it off, cutting it, hitting himself with his nose. It's very weird.
It was so fucking strange. I didn't.
But I would pay fucking good money to watch Sylvester Stallone do that.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, he was definitely more subdued.
Sounds like the Stallone one was more grounded in reality.
It really was.
Yeah.
But yeah. Okay.
We got the maid. We talked about the maid. There's all these bags, and the bags start with the bag of jewels, which was the money that was converted into the precious stones to be given to his wife. And Martin keeps going. Was it Martin? Christian Martin is his full name. He keeps struggling with his greed and his love at the same time.
Yes.
Eventually the heart wins out, but he's constantly...
It's insulting.
Yeah, and at one point he does want the jewels back, and he tries to buy them back with another $65 million that he funneled in cash.
Well, no, what he did there, he did something where he wrote himself his own piece of paper that says, like, I grant Christian Martin, like, power and control over, like, sort of the finances of my company. And, like, he tricks him into signing the paper.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And so he goes to the bank, and he just takes $60 million, but he's got paperwork that says he's allowed to.
Yeah.
And Bernier signed on.
Yeah, because he's the accountant, so he's like, oh, sign here, sign here, sign here. And then he just, he has him sign a piece of paper, and then he just fills in the details of it later.
He has him sign the piece of paper and saying, I have read and understood.
Yeah.
So Bernier has also written in his own handwriting, I have read and understood. So, of course, the bank thinks that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, he's constantly manipulating. I'm like, the gangster thing makes more sense because I'm like, man, I'd murder this motherfucker.
I don't know. A corrupt businessman, I totally get. Because, like, Bernier, the whole time, like, he's trying to get the jewels back and everything back and make the guy marry his daughter without getting anything in return.
Yeah.
Which is the same in the 90s one.
Yeah. He's
trying that, but it never pans out.
So, skipping ahead, there now are three bags because the maid keeps trying to quit, and she's got her bag packed, and she apparently only packed a bag of underwear to leave. She had her maid outfit and her underwear.
Well,
that's
she's
it.
Marrying a rich baron. I think she just figures her wardrobe will come.
Yeah.
And that's just, she just needs her underwear. Okay, as a girl, for your underwear, your bras need to fit.
Yeah.
And a good bra is really worth a lot of money. Yeah.
So now you've got the shell game happening with the bags, especially when there's three of them. You got two bags people actually want and one nobody wants. And guess which one Barnier keeps opening because of all the switches and everything else. Meanwhile, there's another kind of shell game happening with his actual daughter because she is in love with Oscar, but Oscar was fired two weeks prior to the film even starting. And
Left on a polar expedition
or something that he does show up later because he doesn't...
But he's been gone for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And we were told at one point that he's left on a polar expedition. So he's gone for 2 weeks. He didn't go on the polar expedition, but he's just been gone for 2 weeks.
Maybe it took 2 weeks to get to wherever the ship, because it's, you know, it's...
I don't know. I think he's a cad. Yeah, I think he might be a cad.
And he keeps getting scared off. And
well, the giant guy did look like he was going to beat the crap out of
it.
The giant guy can pull a car out of its spot.
True.
It is a French car, though.
Yeah, true.
The giant masseuse guy.
The giant masseuse we actually see at one point. Move a car. It's a small car. It's a really small car, but
still, he's just pulling it by himself.
Yeah, and he's dumber than a sack of hammers.
Oh, totally. See, okay, yeah, and that's...
But Barnier keeps trying to say, hey, yeah, my daughter, if you marry my daughter, she comes with this big dowry.
Yeah.
And, you know, keeps opening the bag and keeps pouring out underwear, and he's like, okay. Okay.
And the masseuse thinks he's insane. He's like, oh, yes, this is jewels.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and most of these scenes come back around again in the John Landis version as well.
Oh, for sure. The underwear running joke. That's a joke. You got to keep that.
Yeah.
You're always going to keep it.
Yeah. I mean, there's more to that one in particular. But, man, just the frantic pace of this movie is...
And there was times when I'm like going, okay, well, how did that get there? Like a couple times I'm like, oh, wait, okay, so that's how that bag got there and that got moved around. Like you have to pay attention.
I wanted to make a floor plan and a chart and
flow chart.
Yeah, he's got that little gym upstairs, which he keeps people in every once in a while. But then he's got a small office where like he pulls it closed with that like the little divider thing.
Yeah. Oh, and at one point, now he's got to actually hire a new maid. New maid shows up, but he knew her from his past and turns out they had quite the past.
Yeah.
And he knocked up the maid. The maid turns out to be the mom of the fake daughter. Yeah. So it's actually the real daughter, and
it's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing. Yeah, I don't know. It's you're right. Like it is a frantic pace, but it's funny. Like you're talking about, like the shell game with his daughter. That's exactly what it is. Because it's sort of like, well, we need to marry her to somebody, and they're just like, yeah, because you can have that, and women are interchangeable, and men are interchangeable. You just have to marry somebody if you're not.
Now, Landis simplifies that a bit. He takes Oscar out of the picture quite early, and there's not as much of a shell game happening. The Sylvester Stallone tries to set her up with Dr. Poole, who's an elocution doctor. He's trying
rather
to,
than a masseuse.
Well,
rather
no,
than
no. A Sylvester Stallone doesn't. It's the other guy who wants to marry the fake daughter. Sets.
Oh yeah.
Her and doctor up because he doesn't want to marry.
Because initially Bertrand and Stallone try to set. Because there are like these contracts that are signed that he marries his daughter, and he'll get
saying
this,
that this is my child.
Yeah, and he'll get this money for the daughter, but he's not marrying the daughter. So Bertrand and Sylvester Stallone think they're coming out great on this, or my daughter gets a husband who makes a good living, even though I'm the one paying for it.
Yeah.
So he's trying like, well, you can't.
Well, both times.
Yeah. If you want to marry the girl you're in love with, you get nothing. If you want to marry my daughter, you get something out of this.
No, I think in both of them, what he's done is he's like, you get to marry my daughter. Now, what he's doing is he's tricking him into thinking, oh, you get to marry my daughter. The guy who wants to marry, who is supposed to be the fake daughter, is who he thinks he's marrying. Like, both times, he's still under the impression that that's the guy's daughter. So by doing that contract, he thinks, oh, this is fine. But then part of the trick is, like, he has to marry the woman he doesn't want to marry, who is the actual daughter. And they're both upset every time. They both don't want to marry this girl.
Nobody wants
but
to marry
but
the
trick is
daughter.
Is that the father's, like, going, well, okay, you don't want to marry my daughter, but you've signed a contract, so, yeah, this is just going to happen. Like, the guy's getting tricked into marrying one he doesn't want, and, like, the daughter has to...
it's constantly upsetting. Everybody's trying to screw everybody else to get what they want. Now, I couldn't find a trailer for the French one in English, so...
You should run it in French just so everyone can feel my pain.
Maybe we should.
Yeah, maybe I will try to find a... I don't have one ready, so I'm not going to run that right now. But I did find one for the Sylvester Stallone one, so.
Sweet.
So, that one I'll run right now. Maybe at the end of this I'll insert the French one just to, for our French audience. For that one guy who understands French. All right, so give a listen to the John Landis 1991 remake trailer for Oscar.
The year is 1931, and gangster Snaps Provolone is in control. The police are powerless. His rivals are helpless. No one in the entire city dares to defy him, except his daughter.
I'm a modern 30s woman. Look!
Put that away! I'm your father!
She'll do anything, anywhere, with anybody.
Your daughter and I are lovers.
What?
Did he tell you I was pregnant?
What?
Touchstone Pictures presents Sylvester Stallone in the story of a father.
What we need is a husband.
Trying to find someone.
But no, look at us!
Who will marry his daughter.
I've decided to go away to a convent.
Well, you're a little late.
Maybe it'll be Anthony.
But I love Thornton.
Or Thornton.
I want Oscar.
Or Oscar.
Who's Oscar?
And he's got pimples.
A couple of dates with you and that'll clear up.
But whoever she decides to spend her life with.
You mean she's having the chauffeur's baby?
It's sure to ruin his life.
I just came from Lisa's bedroom.
You and everybody else.
Sylvester Stallone. Oscar.
Listening to The Invasion of the Remake, and this is Jason Mewes saying snoop to the nooch.
Okay, so that was the trailer for the 1991 John Landis remake, which was adapted for this version by Michael Barry, who you may recall from the screenplays for Bad Boys and Amazon Women on the Moon.
So that's a variety.
One good one, one bad one.
Amazon Women. Awesome.
This movie had a shit ton of people in it.
It's a killer cast.
It is a killer cast. So I'll just read off a few names here. Sylvester Stallone, another name that's hard to pronounce. Ornella Muti?
From Italy.
Italy.
Big Italian actress.
Yeah.
Probably the only real Italian in the whole movie.
Peter Riegert, Elizabeth Barondez, Chaz Palminteri.
Chaz.
Yeah, he's great. Art LaFleur, one of our favorites. Kurtwood Smith, Marissa Tomei, Harry Shearer, Tim Curry, Linda Gray, Jim Mulholland. Vincent Spano, just tons of people in here, and an opening sequence with Kirk Douglas.
Yes.
As Sylvester Stallone's father, who's
beaten on him.
Dying father.
Yeah, his dying father, who makes Sylvester Stallone Angelo Snaps Provolone.
It's actually Prevolone.
Prevolone?
Is it Prevolone?
He always says Prevolone. Everybody else says provolone like the cheese.
Okay, it was even provolone in IMDb, so.
Yeah, Stallone says Prevolone every single time.
Oh.
Whenever he says his name.
Because he doesn't want to sound cheesy.
Get it? Hey-o. Whoa.
Nice one.
So Kirk Douglas makes him promise not to leave a life
you
of crime.
Go, yeah,
he's
straight.
A gangster. Yeah. At one point, he even makes an offhanded joke about St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Yeah.
He's like, looks up fondly in his mind, hey, that was a good day.
Yeah. Yes.
So I kind of like some of the additions into this. They do throw in a little bit of extra jokes in here for its 30s setting. And I was reading that John Landis intentionally set this in the 30s to give it that more of that vaudeville feel.
True.
That farce from that era, that this would fit more into that vein. And I totally get that. It works. I mean, I'd seen this several times and loved this movie as a kid because I like older comedies.
Yeah. Well, this one, out of the two kind of gangster movies sort of around, like this one was earlier, Johnny Dangerously, I always liked a little bit better.
Oh, I love that movie too. Yeah.
Is that
it
was Michael Keaton?
So good. Yeah, yeah. Michael Keaton. And
that one's pretty good too. I really liked this movie watching it last night because I was so aggravated from trying to watch the French one that I just wasn't into it.
Mm-hmm.
But thinking back, I'm like, no, this movie is really good. And like on IMDb, it's like critic rating is very low. Mm-hmm. But if you go through the user reviews, everybody freaking loves this movie.
Yeah.
I still like this movie, although after watching the French one, I do feel the French one works a little bit better. It's tighter.
It's very French. And like you say, all the extra cast, there's only a couple of additions that help it.
Yeah, I feel like they're there to slow things down a little bit.
Connie's like the best additional character.
The Finucci's weren't bad either.
Yeah, the Finucci's.
They were new.
Where are the Finucci's?
They were kind of there to replace the masseuse scenes, but not replace the masseuse character, if that makes any sense.
But I also like the change and not the masseuse character, the doctor.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I thought the masseuse character became Tim Curry.
The function of Tim Curry replaced the masseuse character. Whereas the Finucci's were, in a way, they were there to facilitate Stallone's moving into legitimate businessman. Because this is the day he marks that he's going to
a month after his
dad. This is the day
who dies and then comes back from the dead.
He's made a deal with a bunch of bankers to invest in the bank, and they're really only using him for his money.
Yes.
And there's that red-haired guy, that guy.
That 80s guy?
Yeah.
Yes.
He's the guy who shut the containment thing down in
William Atherton.
William Atherton, yeah.
He's
the guy who shuts down the containment unit in Ghostbusters.
That's right.
He made a living playing bastards.
Yeah.
And he does it so well.
He has the look.
Actually, he's the only one that kind of defends Stallone in this movie.
He's kind of like sitting there going, I get what you mean. Yeah. But what's funny is like Stallone, the whole point of the movie is like going, you guys are crooked. Like I'm used to dealing with crooks. I'm not equipped to deal with bankers.
Yeah.
I had heard that this comedy vehicle for Stallone came after Schwarzenegger had some success with Kindergarten Cop and Twins. And so they thought, maybe that he could make the transition into comedy. And honestly, I think that Stallone is really good at comedy. He has really great timing, and he plays a good straight man.
Yeah. I don't think he's gotten the best scripts for comedy.
I feel like he has an aptitude for it where, as much as I love Schwarzenegger, it comes off really strange.
See, I think it has to, you're right, it has to be the right script, but I think what a bunch of missteps that Stallone has made is that he's wanted to be the funny guy, and he's not. He's funny when the comedy is kind of happening to him and he is the straight person around which the comedy happens.
Which is why this works so well.
Yeah. He's not your comic lead, but he is the person as is. He just has to be the straight man. If he can do that and just stay out of trying to like, make the comedy
happen. I think this is the most successful of the comedies he's done in my mind.
I'd say it's the. Well,
I mean, I don't know has successful, not financially, comedies? But...
Stop or My Mom Will Shoot.
Yeah, this is the one that I think works. I remember that. Stop or My Mom Will Shoot was horrible.
I know, because he was trying to be funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was in Tango and Cash.
I'm not sure.
He was also more straight in Tango and Cash. But again, when he was trying to deliver funny lines, he's not funny.
Yeah, they do trim down this more into reaction than dialogue for him.
And that's what works. Like, he's a great reactor to terrible things happening, and that's where his comedy is.
Yeah.
And that's entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean,
he's quite entertaining in this.
Yeah, he reacts a lot. And there's a lot more slapstick in this one, if that makes
sense.
Yes. And I'd hate to say, like, more slapstick than the 67 one, but, you know, everybody's... Sure. He's got all these gangsters around him that he's adapting into this new lifestyle, you know, this right-hand man is... I'm going to call him the consigliere, is now the butler, right? Mm-hmm. And the rest of these guys. So when he's overreacting, they come charging into rooms with guns and weapons, and he's constantly disarming everybody.
He's like, don't call me boss. Sorry, boss.
Disarms Connie for like, I don't know, 5 minutes.
Oh God, yeah. And the cartoon, like, there's no way.
There's a mace. He's got a mace.
He's got a mace and swords
that
and
character
knives.
Was Chaz Palminteri, right?
Yeah,
that was Connie. Yeah, I really love that character. He like embraced that role
so good, so that that was like I just devoured every scene with him. It was so awesome.
It's weird, like, you know, he's dangerous, but he's just, you just look at him and you just want to, like, he's just such a stupidly sweet mobster. You just like him.
When she's like, "Don't take your eyes off this bag," and he just sits there,
staring.
And then he like always tears up whenever like stuff's happening. Like he sees Jim Curry and the daughter kissing, and he like tears up, and he's tearing up at the wedding.
I like Peter Riegert a lot in this movie.
Yeah, too.
He was so good. Like, he just made that switch from gangster to butler. I'm good at everything I do.
Yeah.
Really funny.
So good.
Let me hang your hat. And just the bond,
two hats,
and they both hit the hat rack, and everything's just so easy for this guy.
So good.
You know, and if he'd been more central in this, he'd probably knew where that what bag was where, and like he probably knew exactly what was going on. He was very efficient in his job, despite the fact that he kept making that bag disappear.
See, and this is the interesting thing. I think what's funny about all of this and the bag switching, the problem with everything happening is everybody is too efficient and too good at their job. So that this keeps happening.
Yeah.
If they were lazy or stupid or slow, this would not have happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. They're all real on it all the time.
Yeah.
Except the maid. I thought the maid was the worst character. Her accent seems really forced.
No, she's not very good, and she plays down a lot less as well. Like they don't play her as much as they do in the other one.
No,
she constantly, you know, can I speak to you for a minute, Mr. Provolone? And no, just no, until she finally gets to quit. And in similar circumstances, she's going to marry the formerly pimply rich dude that was originally set up with the daughter. The daughter in this case being Marissa Tomei. So
I thought she did a really great job. I kind of felt like she was playing like a 1930s like Jewish princess kind of character.
Kind of.
Even though she was supposed to be Italian, but I thought she did a great job. The start, stop, crying was really funny. Mm-hmm. The like really gutter accent.
She doesn't come off as bratty as the French one.
Thank you. Yeah, there's still something endearing about her, even though she seems spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she was a charming character. I liked her.
Yeah.
And I like the mother in this one, too.
Yeah, she comes more manipulative in this one than bratty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She strikes in a little bit. And I like the fact that she goes for the doctor. Like, he's...
That's
just a smarter guy.
That's just weird. Like,
I love that. You know, I totally would go for Jim Curry. Why not?
Yeah.
Well, because she's just like, I don't know. He's like a really sweet character. Everything about Tim Curry's character is perfect.
Yeah. Now, Anthony's like, the suitor.
Yeah. Suitor crooked accountant.
Crooked accountant.
That guy was good, too.
That's Vincent Spano.
Vincent Spano.
Yeah. He did a good job.
I wait until the credits. I'm like, that's Vincent Spano?
I don't think he comes off more charming than Weasley than the other guy. I think the other guy, he's manipulative. I buy his greed.
Yeah.
You know, and he's constantly, I buy him as the con.
Yeah.
I don't buy Vincent Spano as much in this one.
I don't know. I kind of did. I sort of got it.
Yeah, he was like too charming, you know?
Yeah.
Like he would he's a con man.
He was a little too upset at the loss of that first bit of money.
Yeah.
Oh, he does he plays it a little bit more in this one, but I don't know. I felt the other guy was far more weaselly.
I don't know. I felt, in the other one, I felt Oscar was the true weasel out of the whole thing in, like, the 1967 one. Like, that Oscar guy, I was like, oh, you may be pretty to look at, but you're terrible.
Oh, yeah.
I hated him.
He was super handsome when he showed up, right?
Yeah. That's what I thought was great about all Oscar showing up in this one, where he's just like
this random.
Honestly,
dude.
I'm kind of confused at why the movie's named after the character who's not in the movie.
But they reference him all the time, and they're all looking for Oscar. And I thought it was really great with him not being in the movie.
Yeah,
and you're like, well, who the hell is Oscar? Yeah. And you knew as soon as like the wedding comes at the end that he's going to show up.
Oh sure.
And then he's like just this tiny guy, and Stallone has had enough. He's like, get him out of here.
Isn't there like another movie where there's like a character where they just kind of never show up and they keep
Usual
talking
suspects.
About him? Maybe Kaiser Soze, or maybe there's also a play Waiting for Godot. They talk about Godot the entire time. Doesn't show.
Yeah.
I thought it worked well.
Yeah, a missing character is a great device.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, he was like the vehicle for the majority of the shell games in this, and then the stupid maid was the one for the other one, just to get the bags moving, right?
Yeah, yeah. They do simplify this one a little bit with the shell game, just to make it a little easier to follow.
There's a lot of jewels in that bag. Is that just me?
Oh, yeah. Whereas the other one felt like it was a little more legitimate, high-end. Here's a few jewels, but they're really high-end. This thing was just loaded. It's like, how many jewelry stores did you heist?
and then we were talking, like, while you're running the trailer, I'm like, because something that bothered me the whole time, when they're like, he converted it into jewels. Yeah. I don't know if you're familiar with jewelry and stuff like that. Unless you're willing to kind of sell it on the black market, the resale value of something that's already put into, like, a piece of jewelry is a lot less than what you put into it.
Yeah. Whereas this one makes sense, because if he's buying all this stuff off of a fence, there's probably, that bag's probably got the retail value that...
Yeah, and the French one, not at all.
No. When you start thinking in gangster terms, they're probably using fences and things like that. Because, I mean, he's just turning legit that day in the Landis film. So any money that's been siphoned off is from criminal enterprises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He knows how to hide it.
Yeah, yeah. And he picked the right day because, my God, everybody's trying to shoot him.
Yes. Yeah, that whole movie happens in 4 hours of time. Like, everything that happens in that movie is a span of 4 hours. Because he's up he's up at 8 and then the bankers come at noon, which is the...
The end.
The end of the movie, right? Yeah. With all the cops and the other gang, which kind of
FBI
was a weird subplot.
Yeah, it was weird. In the original film, when they realize they have the bag of clothes again and they don't have any, everybody jumps in their cars to go
after the maid.
Now, in this one, Kurtwood Smith is Lieutenant Toomey, along with a couple other cops, one of which is Art LaFleur, and they're all monitoring Provolone and his house, and they're constantly seeing these bags back and forth, and they're just thinking, my God, they're doing drops in the broad daylight.
See, I thought they were FBI. I could be wrong.
I don't know.
What about Art LaFleur? Every scene in that movie through the entire thing, he's snacking on something?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he's like a big, huge guy, right?
Yeah.
I just thought that was funny. He never has a word, but he's snacking.
He was doing the Brad
scene.
Pitt in Ocean's 11 and 12.
Yeah.
But looks the part.
Yeah, he looks like he could legitimately be snacking all that time.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Kurtwood's just trying to, he wants to get the big collar, right?
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he wants the media to see it and everything else. He wants to be the hero cop.
Mm-hmm.
So he's monitoring
all
this.
He's the dad from that 70s show, in case no one knows what his name is.
Yeah. And for the guys who didn't watch television, he's the villain from the original RoboCop.
Yes.
Yep. Yes, he is.
So, hey, look, we might actually be able to talk about him again.
I know.
I know, right? So he's, in a way, this is to make these switches kind of okay. Because the bankers show up, he thinks they're all gangsters, and he's thinking they can do this big bust near the end.
Yeah.
And the constant bag switches and opens up the bag in front of the media and is full of underwear. So this actually works well for Provolone, even though it's costing him a lot of money that he's been swindled and off to the races with the the maid. He's like, maybe I shouldn't go after her because this will keep me out of jail.
But you're like, this is your lead. You kind of want, like, Snaps is trying to go legit. You kind of want him to win a little.
And that's just it. There's that extra little thing where it's just this little guy in the French film who's just trying to keep up with the plot. Whereas this one, it's the same plot, but he's also trying to go straight to honor his father, so there's this little extra motivation to root for your lead. And he's just, you know, trying to make a go of this, trying to keep his guys on track and everything else, and you know, try to go clean. And it's the world is not letting him do it.
It's like, just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in. He's trying so hard.
All the gangsters were great, like, accepting their, like, weirdo roles.
Yes.
Like, he asked the one guy to go get his daughter or something like that. And he's like, I can't. I'm smoking a salmon. And he has this, like, big raw salmon. Well, put it out.
Yeah. They're cooking. In
was
the
he smoking it with his cigar? Like, maybe. I wasn't sure.
And the I love the one gangster in all the kitchen scenes. She's just endlessly kneading that huge thing of bread.
I know.
Or dough. Like, just every scene through the whole 4 hours.
No bread gets made. Yeah. He's just doing the same bit of dough. But it is 4 hours. It takes a while to get that batch to be bread. Done.
But yeah, it was pretty funny. All those guys were great. I really liked them. And they had the endless, like, sorry, boss.
Sorry,
and they
boss.
All, like, just the timing, right? And I really love the scene where he's like, don't call me boss, call me Mr. Prevalone.
Mr. Prevalone.
And they're all walking down the stairs in unison. And they're, like, it was just, it's so well put together.
Yeah.
Like, the dialogue, like, you know, they're all on time with each other perfectly. I really liked it. It was really good.
Now, the additions of the Finucci's.
Yeah.
They're the tailors. They're trying to make Provolone look like a
it's
big a business guy. Yeah, the Finucci. And their way of advertising their brand is a gangster had been murdered in a restaurant in one of their suits. And
it still looks nice.
Yeah, and it still looks nice. And Provolone's like, oh, that's a nice piece of work. Nice suit, too.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Yeah, he's over the tail, been over the tail, still looks good.
So they think this is their claim to fame. So they're constantly showing this little piece of paper to people like, hey, look at this.
Which does come back later.
And that comes back around in a really funny way with Anthony.
Which what I think is that what you were kind of touching on with the masseuse character is like the intimidation part with the masseuse. The Finucci's occupy that because they've made Tim Curry like this mild-mannered doctor. He can't be that person.
No.
Yeah, so Stallone convinces Anthony that they're hitmen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Finucci's, they stand up. It's like, Finucci, sit down. They sit down.
Yeah. They're very reactive to their client. So it looks like they're just ready at the snap of a finger to do whatever they want. And when they get some private time, they show Anthony the piece of paper.
This is our work.
This is our work. He's like, you did this? Yeah. Oh, sometimes we do. 7 or 8 in a day.
And they think they're telling him about
this. It's just like a job to you? Oh, yeah, but we don't like to work on weekends. We're family men.
It's like, we're family men. Who are your kids? Well, there's a Leo. He's trying to name them.
I got a 10 Bambinos. You don't got a 10 Bambinos.
Yeah.
I got a little Luigi, big
there
Luigi,
are some
Luigi
minor characters that are so good. Just like they add just some fun.
Yeah.
I think all the side characters in this play a role. Like everyone's important.
Yeah. And they're all kind of still like, even the additional scenes, they're all that classic vaudeville scenario. I kept thinking back to Adam Costello and some were visual gags, Three Stooges, and. Yeah, it really is a love letter to that stuff. And I can see maybe in the 90s why the movie didn't do very well because so far removed, unless you really appreciate that older style of film, you might not get it. It wasn't what was popular in the day. You got to think this is when Andrew Dice Clay was really hot and Eddie Murphy, and it was
we're
a much
to the 90s.
Raw
we're getting
kind
Kevin
of comedy.
Smith, Clerks, we're getting like that
just
90s independent movies
later,
a little bit later, only 3 years, But you're getting like, yeah, 91 grunge. It's not, people are not looking back on that. It's, I think it's the same reason why Clue didn't land when it first came out, but people came to love it later.
Yeah.
It's that same farce.
Yeah. And it was more of the raunchy comedies and stuff that were in favor at the time, and the more classic dialogue driven kind of gags. Just, that wasn't what people were looking for.
No. No. But yeah, I think like it, this one ages. I don't remember liking it, I think, when I first saw it. But watching it now, I do enjoy it.
Yeah. Now, I mean, as a kid, when I saw this movie, I was howling. But my first exposure to a lot of that stuff were older films. Like, yeah. We had a black and white TV. A lot of that was still being rerun on television because the newer movies never hit television at that time. No. So it was a lot of more classic stuff. And I'd watch that with my dad or even my grandparents. So, that was my introduction to comedy. My comedians were Abbott Costello and the Marx Brothers and
it's a lot of that.
Burns and Allen. And, I saw all that stuff. I mean, I was technically too old that I shouldn't have known who these people, but that was the comedy I grew up loving.
Fast talking, door slams, misunderstandings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's always moving, too. Like the people are always everything.
Yeah. When you say it's exhausting, it is. There's a lot of fast pace. You've got to pay attention.
Oh, yeah. Especially the French one. My God. At least when I watch the 91, I'm like,
it's a leisurely pace.
Yeah, I felt like I was just like, okay, now I'm good now. Like, this is much easier to follow. Because the dialogue slows down. If anything, it's kind of being picked up by the people around them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which I think works really great.
Yeah, I think so too.
Everybody keeps it moving. It's like a really frantic game of telephone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who said this? Who said that? Mm-hmm. Kind of thing.
I think we should, because it kind of glossed over with the other mob or whatever, the inconsequential gangsters for the beginning and end of the film.
Yeah, what are they called? The Vendettis?
Vendettis.
Vendettis. I love how that is, the Vendettis. Yeah. What does that sound like?
Yeah. Vendettis. Well, there's a scene where the head of the Vendettis is getting his nails done, and the girl doing it, the manicurist, is Arlene Sorkin.
Yes.
And right away, even my wife picked this up, right away, Arlene Sorkin is the voice of Harley Quinn.
The original Harley Quinn.
Who's a huge deal. But this
I knew it from other things.
This is 3 years prior to Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
And even Arlene Sorkin's first Batman gig was as, like, Bunny in Mask of the Phantasm. But, like, she is straight up doing Harley.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same character.
Oh, it is. It's I kept waiting for her to say, Mr. J?
Yeah. And that's exactly what Heather said, too. She's like, yeah, she just needs to say Mr. J. And
it was
neat to see her. And she actually kind of looks like her.
Yeah, yeah. Kinda she weird. Was, seeing a younger Arlene Sorkin at that point. And, still the bubbly blonde. But she put on that really thick accent with the high-pitched voice. And
anything else you want me to do?
Yeah, and it was. It was Harley Quinn. It was fantastic.
Yeah, if you're a fan of the Batman animated series.
But at the same time, I'm like, it just made me realize, I'm like, oh, yeah, that was like that 30s mall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? So it... In a way, that was perfect. Yeah,
and I mean that in Batman, that is the like overall atmosphere of that show was that kind of 30s style stuff, right? That pulp era stuff.
So makes me wonder if Bruce Timm and the other producers
they watched Oscar and were like,
"That's a Harley. That's a Harley."
Maybe.
So I don't know. We need some verification on this.
Harley was a construct of the cartoon. A lot of people forget that.
Yeah,
she did not exist in comic books. She was made specifically for that show. So I wonder if she was made specifically because they saw Arlie Sorkin in Oscar.
Yeah,
like, just do that again.
I mean, that character's changed so much now that...
Yeah, she's... you can't go anywhere in that community and not trip over Harley Quinn.
Five or six Harley Quinns.
Yeah, now... And I mean, these days we got with the Suicide Squad.
I can see at least two in this room.
Yeah, exactly. Got two hanging on my wall.
I see much over there.
Well, there's more sitting on my shelf statue-wise. But yeah, the character's... turned more into almost a character out of a porn movie these days.
Yeah, seems that way.
Yeah, she's getting very sexualized.
In the 90s, she was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, still an awesome character, and I don't think... I think when that movie drops, it's going to be just her and Deadpool. That's all we're going to hear about, her and Deadpool.
Oh, that's all I'm hearing about is Fucking God. Deadpool. You know who I hated? Deadpool.
The business I'm in, we got carpet bombed years ago with Deadpool.
And, yeah, you're sick of it, I'm sure.
And that's all I got this past week was, have you seen Deadpool? Fuck off. At this point, I don't want to see Deadpool. I'm never going to be able to escape that fucking character. He's the new Bart Simpson now.
He kind of is the new Bart Simpson. Yeah. Every time I sell a New Mutants 98 for some extortionary amount of money, I'm just like, you're paying for a Rob Liefeld creation. Have a good day, sir.
Considering how common that book actually is.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I remember we found one in a box.
I just put one out for 400,
yeah. Yeah. Wow. I remember pulling one out of a box that we bought, a long box of comics, and there was $5 price tag on it, and I peeled it off, and underneath was a $15 price tag, and I peeled that off, and there was a $10 one. I peeled that off, there was a $20
Holy
one.
Holy Jesus, that must have been a really
sat forever. Oh yeah, it was like stacked. That's why I was peeling them individually. Yeah. Like no one cared about that character. Yeah. It was great.
I remember how long that was, like just a dollar bin book for the longest time.
Yeah,
it's like hindsight, I probably would have bought a shit ton of those books.
I was
gonna pay for a house right
talking
now.
Talking with the people who own where you work there about. Walking Dead, because a collection was coming in the store that day, or maybe it came in, I'm not sure, but Deb said it was. And we were talking about Walking Dead, and I was moonlighting at a comic shop when that book came out, and I remember looking at that book going, ugh, you know, I'm kind of done with this zombie thing. I'll wait for the trades.
That's what I did,
but too. There's 25 of them on the shelf, and it's a $2,000 book now. I could have bought them all, but yeah. Who knew, right?
Yeah, I missed my shot at it, too. I was working when that book came out, and I didn't grab it because I was so zombied out, and I have been for the past 15 years now, I think.
Yeah, it's been a little overwhelming.
Yeah.
I think the greatest moment in this movie, and I feel like, because they had talked about possibly Danny DeVito being the lead and a couple other people, but I think casting Stallone is what made Tim Curry's character an elocution coach.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then had the greatest scene in the entire movie where Tim Curry is giving Stallone speech lessons.
Yeah.
And he just can't. Stallone's like, I never learned to speak too good. And I just, like, you know, that it was that all tongue-in-cheek? Like, it was hilarious.
Yeah.
It's good.
Oh,
it's
the dangling participle joke.
The diphthongs.
Yeah.
And he talks like the Marissa Tomei. He's like, you speak very well, considering your upbringing.
Yeah. Connie, you've got a dangling participle. Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
Turns around.
Like, yeah, like, he's mild-mannered, but he's just funny. He's entertaining.
I just worry about Mother, but then again, she does have the cats. He's so good. You could just cut his scenes into like a little short, and it would be fantastic. But yes. that bit is my absolute favorite part in the whole movie. It's like
even, he's giving speech even lessons. Shitty movies, Tim Curry's usually pretty good.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've seen some terrible movies, but because he was
in he's in a lot of terrible movies.
I know, but
this is not one of them.
True.
Or, some people might disagree, but I think those are the people who never saw the movie.
Those are the people who just hate Stallone.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Like I mean. Like I've said before, like I think this is the one where he took his strength. Like they were like his strength for comedy. Somebody was able to direct him so that he was like convinced him that this is what you need to play and it'll be really funny.
Mm-hmm.
And
are you saying that John Landis is a competent director?
In this,
he has been crazy. Known.
he has had a couple successes.
Yeah.
Really, he's the one who made Stallone funny for me. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, probably one of the best known horror movies.
His resume is gigantic. Yeah. But American Werewolf in London,
which is incredibly funny.
Amazing, and it's really funny.
It's an incredibly funny movie.
So like, it's sort of once they got that in there, like just made it work. And I think it's one of those movies. You have to, like I said, I don't remember enjoying it when I first saw it, but now I really do. I think this has aged well.
Yeah, well, because it's a classic form of comedy.
Yeah.
And timing's everything, and I think that it was just an ill-timed movie.
Yeah, because I was trying to look at the IMDb and stuff that came out around that time, and there wasn't a lot. Like, I think the big movie that year was, like, Silence of the Lambs, but you go to, like, a couple years, you got Wayne's World, like, stuff that's based on, like, characters from SNL. It's not the same. You're moving into a completely different era. This wasn't, it just, I don't think it was released at the right time. Maybe 4 years earlier it might have. I don't know.
Maybe seven years later. I don't know if, maybe timing was never an issue. Maybe it's just a case of, it's an older style of comedy, but will that have worked in any time? You know, it's just maybe it works better as a play. I don't know.
I really felt like it would be good as a play. They, even in the Stallone one, they play it like a stage play.
It still has that stage play feel, that single location. It's still a big manor kind of thing, but the camera follows it around really nicely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There is that one moment that I noticed in the film that, like, bang, took me right out. When Stallone breaks the fourth wall, and I don't know if you caught it, that he's talking to Anthony in, like, the library area, and they're bantering back and forth, and all the bags have done their thing, and it was something about the 50 grand in cash that he had skimmed. Not the jewels, the cash. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
to buy back the jewels.
Yeah. And that, then,
which we were hoping was going to be a bag full of laundry, but wound up being the jewels.
Mm-hmm. Whatever Anthony had said, and I should have wrote it down, but whatever Anthony had said was like an eye roll moment, right? It was like, oh, you know, you got to be kidding me. But Stallone looks directly into the camera and does one of those, you know, eye roll kind of facial expressions.
Yeah.
And it was like, you would, if you were at a play, you know, you would pull the audience in, right? But, like, in a movie, it was just like, whoa! I just pulled me right out of it. I don't know. Looking at John Landis's, like, some of his other movies, and, like, he kind of knows comedies, you know? Some, like, small-budget pictures like Animal House and The Blues Brothers and Trading Places. And
oh, Trading Places.
Spies Like Us. And
Spies Like Us.
Oh, Coming to America. Really good, yeah, he's... And then Oscar.
Yeah.
See, he's a good comedy director.
Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Okay.
She starts losing it in the 90s, but whatever.
A lot of people lost it in the 90s. It's American fine. There's a lot of drugs. There was heroin.
Paris?
Was,
did he direct Paris?
I don't think he directed Paris.
Okay, maybe that's a good thing then.
Oh, good God, yes.
He also directed the greatest music video of all time.
That's what I keep thinking of every time I think John Landis. That's the first thing that comes to my head.
Yeah.
Well, and most recently, Burke and Hare in like 2010.
Oh, Burke and Hare was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked Burke and Hare.
Yeah, he's got some chops. He's got some chops.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those names, like, I'll try to tell people their resume when I name a director. Yeah. I just don't have to. It's John Landis, right?
No.
Everyone knows John Landis.
Yeah.
You've seen a John Landis movie. If you haven't seen a John Landis movie, I can't help you.
Yeah,
exactly. Seen a lot of movies if you haven't seen at least one of them.
You know, and you watch a John Landis movie and you watch a movie from a filmmaker who loves movies.
Yeah.
Like, you know he does. He knows his stuff. I don't know how many times I've seen him on documentaries about filmmaking and or film genres, and he's just so passionate about that.
Well, yeah, like, and that's really illustrative here. Like, he knows how to ape that far style and do it well.
Yeah.
Like, he gets it.
And he also knows how to, like, play to his cast. Strengths.
Yes.
I felt. Especially with Oscar, but then looking back at like Blues Brothers and stuff, like he knows how to have the right character for the right actor.
Yeah. I read somewhere that Sylvester Stallone would have played this movie differently, but I don't know. Maybe it's just because it hasn't had the best historical look at it, where, you know, it's had a lot of negativity behind it. I think it was up for Razzies and stuff that year.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Him and Marissa Tomei.
Yeah. Which is a shame.
But when you watch the 1967.
I don't think it's really his performance. I don't.
No.
In fact, I don't think there's anything really bad about this movie. It's actually a really entertaining movie.
If you want an over the top comedy with, like, incredibly well written misdirection, it's the movie to watch.
Yeah.
And I think it's sort of what, when you're talking about Razzies, sometimes it's sort of like, it's not, you're right, I don't think it's his performance in this movie.
No.
I think it's sort of the whole idea, and we've seen Stallone try to do comedy and do it badly, sort of like, that just seemed to be like, your fallback thing is like, oh, he's done a comedy, we gotta nominate it for a Razzie. It's like, it's like the Oscars. Every time, you know, Michael Fassbender just does something in front of a camera, we apparently have to give him an Oscar for it.
I don't think maybe the audiences knew where to put it. Comedy, like I said, the comedies were going a different direction, and in most people's minds, farces were kind of that Mel Brooks Police Academy kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a little,
you know, and that's which it's not. It's not that kind of late 80s type of farce either. So it's somewhere in between.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of that, this week, Commandant Lassard died.
What?
Oh,
yeah.
I did not know.
He was like 93, I think.
I loved him. He was so really delightful. Funny. A goofy little commandant.
Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah, I'm just looking it up now. I can't remember his name.
All I can remember is like George he's Gaines. Doing. Oh, George Gaines. All I can remember is like one of the dirtiest things I remember seeing as a child and not quite understanding what was happening in Police Academy, where he's giving the speech and the prostitute is underneath the podium.
The podium, yeah.
The blowjob.
Didn't know what was going on. I was a youngster, but apparently something was happening.
Wasn't he the dad in Punky Brewster as well?
Oh,
yeah, I think so. I think he might have been.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So just because you brought up Police Academy, so rest in peace, George Gaines.
Aww.
We will remember you forever as Commandant Lassard. At least I will.
I will too. Yeah,
Commandant Lassard, you made a ragtag bunch of nobodies into a well-meaning unit that stops a riot. You rock.
A riot led by Bobcat Goldthwait.
Yes, who is really delightful. FYI.
Yeah, he's an awesome guy.
Yeah,
great actor too.
Well, to wrap up Oscar.
Shakes the Clown.
No, Willow Creek and Call Me Lucky.
Oh, didn't he direct Shakes the Clown as well?
I don't know if he directed. He might have written it.
I know he wrote and starred, and it has like possibly Adam Sandler's first on-screen role.
Holy crap.
Because he's like 12 in that
movie. We blame you.
No, he didn't know what he was doing.
He was good until Billy Madison, and then after that it all fell apart.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think of anything else I'd want to say. Like I say, like for the 1991, underrated. Like,
yeah,
I think if you don't like it, just give it another look.
And right it ends now. in the big wedding with Marisa Tomei marrying Toombs, and of course Antony marrying the fake daughter, not daughter.
Yeah, the fake daughter,
the fake daughter that is the daughter, the not daughter that certainly is the daughter.
Lisa and Teresa.
But I like Teresa. The all's well that ends well, like the happy ending.
And that one makes a little more sense that, you know.
But he goes back to crime, like that's
insinuated. At the end of the day, he's like, I tried, pops.
He did. He tried, but it feels like more of a happy ending than the other one.
Yeah,
in a way, you know, they don't go chasing the money at the end of the movie.
It's inconsequential.
At the end of the day, it's more about,
it's about marrying off your daughters.
Yeah.
That's what that movie is about.
Happiness.
Apparently, divesting yourself of apparently these burdens that are women.
Yeah.
But
do you think his guys killed Oscar?
Get him out of here. I think they did.
I don't know if they did. I think they probably took him somewhere, put him in the army again. I don't know.
I'm confident.
I think they put him on a boat somewhere.
Oh, and that was Oscar is the screenplay writer.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That might do it.
I can't remember his name, but he that's his cameo.
Oh,
his,
Jim Mulholland.
Yeah, Jim Mulholland. His one and only screen appearance as Oscar.
Nice.
Yeah. But he wrote quite a number of screenplays.
Yeah. But I think you're right to, not have him, Oscar, show up at all.
It works so much better.
Because
then you know there's always that wild card.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I also really like the German chauffeur.
Oh, yeah. Because at one point, the chauffeur for...
The rich guy.
The rich guy that the maid is marrying brings back the bag from the maid, and that... which the maid had already brought it back.
Yeah, this one is now. Yeah, now he's brought back the underwear again.
Yeah, he's brought it back again
in exchange for the cash.
But they play off the German Schnell soldier thing. I mean, this is post World War I, pre World War II. So
yeah, well, even when he disarms, when Stallone disarms Connie, he's like, it's like disarming Germany.
Yeah,
but, yeah. So then that guy, Mir something, I can't remember his name. I like how the doorman reacts to him. He's like, ah, just sit here, Fritz. But if you played a video game that has a Nazi in it, he voiced him.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Did you? There's another breaking the fourth wall moment in the Landis movie where the maid mentions seeing a play in France.
I didn't.
This reminds me about a play in France. And I'm like, it was a reference to Oscar.
Well, crazy. I never thought that.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen this movie a few times, but because I'd never knew that prior. It was just an offhanded piece of dialogue that didn't make any sense to me until I watched it this time.
Yeah. And if the maid said it, I probably just drowned it out because I was tired of her really bad Irish accent.
Yeah.
Oh, it was
not even the bad Irish accent. I just didn't like her.
Like, you have an elocution coach right there. Like, just give her a hand. Oh, I like how he picks out where Anthony is from, like what like section of New Jersey.
Yeah, based
yeah,
on
so
his...
good. What's funny? We're talking about the bad Irish accent. There's a BuzzFeed video online where Irish people listen to actors try to do Irish accents. Watch it; it's funny. They're like going, "What?" Apparently, everybody's trying to mimic Sean Connery in The Untouchables. That's what they've decided. Every single Irish person trying to do an Irish accent, that's who it is.
It's a Scott trying to do an Irish.
Yeah, that's what they do. He's like going, it's all terrible.
Either that or you're all trying to get to the Lucky Charms.
Yes.
That's why I appreciate Sean Connery so much. It doesn't matter what his role is, he just doesn't try. You ever seen The Hunt for Red October? Isn't he a Russian?
He's a Russian
commander?
Just trying to play.
He's a Scottish Russian.
And he just talks. He's just like, is that your best? I don't know.
But I think it's that whole best. It's the Kevin Costner effect where if you really can't do it, just don't. Just don't. It's better if you don't.
Yeah. It's like in Troy when everybody's British. It's fine. Just roll with it. Don't worry about it.
Well, there's what was the name of that movie? It was about a Russian campaign in World War II. Enemy at the Gate.
Yes.
Everybody's British. Except for... all the Russians are British. Except for the British, I think.
They're all American.
They're all American.
I can't remember which movie it was or if it was just a TV show or a sketch where somebody's like going, I don't know what this... What is everybody seeing that... In Germans, we just speak English with a German accent and not just German.
It's true. They just do.
Nice.
But, yeah, it's true. I'm like, well, yeah, but why would they speak English? They're German. They should be speaking German. Just put some subtitles on. We're doing a bit of reading, guys. Just do that.
Well, we never thought we'd actually be doing a Stallone movie on this show, but
sure, that's Dredd.
That's not a remake.
No, Air's a remake.
It is.
Sort of.
Dredd,
I guess it wouldn't be a remake.
No, it's like the Derivative. Batman movies I would not call remakes either. It's another person's interpretation. Because the two movies, there's nothing alike. Because they're based on comics, so there's so much territory you can cover in those things. I don't see any similarities between Dredd and Judge Dredd.
Yeah, me neither. One's good. You want to guess which one I think is the good one?
The Stallone one. you know,
I don't know. There might have been remakes where they've been tried to make Rambo in another country.
There's the Russian Rambo.
There's Russian
Red
Rambo.
Scorpion with Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
See? Yeah, there are remakes with Stallone.
So pretty much this was his funniest movie since The Party and At Kitty and Studs, a.k.a. The Italian Stallion.
I have to admit, that's one I keep thinking I should watch, but then stop myself at the last moment.
I can lend it to you. I have it on VHS.
Oh, nice.
Why?
Why not?
You wanted to see Stallone's thing.
No, it's super softcore. Don't worry. Don't worry.
Oh, you can't get it up?
No one's getting penetrated in that movie unless he has a 21-inch dick.
That's very Emmanuel.
Okay, so that's, the 70s single X movie?
Yeah, single X.
There was a ton of single X movies.
Yeah, but it gave us Rocky, so you can't discount it for that.
The ones playing on Showtime late at night.
Lots of TNA.
Or Skinamax.
The Skinamax version.
The Skinamax movie.
Oh, yeah. You know what? The other comedy, Stop Or My Mom Will Shoot, it came out the following year, and then it was Demolition Man. So he just gave up after that. He's like, no more comedy.
Well, Stop Or My Mom Will Shoot had a lot of problems. One, not being funny.
Somebody thought it was a good idea.
Yeah. He's literally not done another comedy since.
Yeah. When was Tango and Cash?
Tango is a very tongue-in-cheek movie, but it's, yeah.
There was they were aiming for comedy.
Yeah, that was 89. Yeah.
It was, in a way, it was meant to be a spoof of action movies that were coming out at the time, but not overly so. It fits in the genre, the 90s action movie genre, pretty good. So I do like that movie, as bad as it is.
it's horrible,
but so much fun.
I'll watch a movie if Stallone's in it. I think he's awesome.
Yeah, I do too.
I'll still eat hamburgers from McDonald's, not all the time, but I enjoy them.
Every time I turn my hat backwards and I enter into an arm wrestling competition, I just think of
Lincoln
Hawk.
Over the top.
Yeah, over the top, Dad.
Well, you guys can join the conversation and tell us what your favorite comedic Stallone moment is, despite not being in a comedy. And you can,
I am the law.
Just,
I am the law.
Yeah, clip it, whatever, send it to us, tweet us over on Twitter. We are at Invasion Remake. We are Invasion of the Remake on Facebook. And, of course, invasiontheremake@gmail.com. Tell your friends. Tell five friends. Tell everybody to like us on Facebook. And of course, listen to us over on iTunes. Rate, review, subscribe. I can't iterate that enough. Please rate us. Just give us a five-star review, whatever you're watching us on or listening to us on. And tell friends. You know, that helps us raise in the charts. So.
And plus, we can, since we did Oscar, we'll let you know that we're going to be tweeting during the Oscars.
Yeah, well, this is actually running after the Oscars, so at this point, I'm telling you, we're telling them too late. So,
well, we told them in our Oscar show, though.
But yeah, we told you guys in the Oscar show, and we're recording this prior to the Academy Awards.
We tried.
Yes, but yeah,
we tried so hard.
At this point, you have already seen our live tweets as it degraded into whatever it did.
I apologize again for getting horrifically drunk.
Despite the fact that it hasn't happened yet.
I didn't mean all that vitriol. I just get angry when I'm on bourbon.
I can see the Academy Awards is already going to be a trial for me.
I shouldn't have said those things, guys.
I'll bring the bucket. All right. Well, that was Oscar. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jason.
I'm Jeff.
I'm Trish.
And we are out of here.
Whoa.
I am the law.
Moi, ouais, quand je vais devenir baronne, j'aimerais tout de même bien que monsieur me paie mon mois. Pourquoi ce jeune homme veut-il m'appeler maman?
C'est une chose dont nous pouvons parler entre hommes.
Oui.
Je suis l'amant de votre fille.
Quoi? Oh non. C'est pas possible. Je n'ai pas compris. J'en ai trop dans la matinée. Dis-moi, ce n'est pas vrai. Et puis c'est fabuleux. Et tout ça par ta pompe. Regardez ce qu'elle a l'air bête à lui laver comme ça. Clac. Et si tu continues à faire autant de bruit, je te mettrai pensionnaire dans une institution religieuse. Jusqu'à ta majorité. Et où ça? En Auvergne. Oscar.
Mon Oscar.
Qui c'est ça, Oscar?
Oscar! Comment se fait-il que vous ne soyez pas Oscar?
Pardon, c'est Oscar le responsable?
Où est-il, Oscar? Oscar!
Charlotte.
Monsieur Bertrand.
C'est la grande rigolade là-dedans.
Il y a des choses qu'on peut...
Non!
Enfin, essayez de comprendre! Comme ça! La valise de la bonne, j'ai demandé au baron de me la faire rapporter au baron, ça!
Mais quel baron?
Je vous répète que ma bonne épouse un baron, mais vous ne comprenez donc rien! Pas de...
Tu n'auras rien! Mais reviens!
Voilà, tu n'auras pas... Comme ça, t'as un cri, comme ça, t'as un lieu de...
Il faut d'abord te pousser tout de suite. Chaque fois que je te vois, je me demande toujours si tu es dans ton état normal.
Ma valise. Mon Dieu, faut que ce soit ma valise. Il y a là-dedans de quoi faire votre bonheur. De quoi faire votre bonheur! Ah! Ah! Je suis zinzin!
Je suis entré à votre service il y a 2 ans, comme employé aux écritures, aux appointements de 500 francs par mois.
C'est incroyable, ça!
Un peu de sucre, s'il vous plaît. Merci. 2.